Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Cohen, who's a fellow at the Century Foundation and a columnist at the UK Guardian, where he writes a regular feature on politics and national security. He's the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, the greatest presidential campaign speeches of the 20th century and how they shape modern America. And previously he served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the US representative to the United Nations. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Cohen.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And starting on Tuesday, the world leaders will be giving speeches in a temporary building since the the General Assembly is being renovated. Starting off with Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff, who canceled her recent meeting at the White House over her anger at NSA spying on her and other Brazilians. She's followed by Obama. Do you think Dilma Rousseff's going to go to town on the NSA? I think that's the expectation, isn't it?
I mean, I suppose it's possible. It's a really, I think that's a interesting story in itself, that she is, I think, very much playing to domestic politics in making this an issue. And it's a really unfortunate byproduct of some of the leaks that have come out that it's put a crimp in U.S.-Brazilian relations over this.
Well, but our allies aren't too happy about it neither, and foreign businesses aren't that do business with the United States. So,
well, I mean, look, yeah. Here's the reality. Everybody knows this goes on, and everyone does it. The Brazilians do it, the Russians do it, the Chinese do it all the time, certainly even more than we do. So this isn't a huge surprise, I think, that this kind of surveillance is going on. The problem is that once it becomes public, then Democrats, like the leaders, have to respond to it or look as if they are sort of just stooges of the U.S. So that, I think, explains the reaction more than anything else. I mean, the Brazilian government engages in quite a bit of its own domestic surveillance of its own population. So I don't want to say it's hypocrisy, but I think it's certainly, it's a political reaction that she is having to this. And, you know, it's understandable, but it's one that I think is rather unfortunate. Cause I think there's much bigger, more important issues between the U.S. and Brazil that are going to get sidetracked because of this situation.
So let's talk about Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and how do you think, since you was chief speechwriter for Bill Richardson, if you were advising the U.N., U.S. representative to the U.N., and the task was to somehow set up an impromptu casual meeting in the corridor somewhere between these two states that aren't speaking to each other, how do you go about that?
Well, first of all, I think it'd be well above the pay grade of the speechwriter.
I agree, but just
well above the great pay grade of the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. I mean, this is an incredibly fraught with symbolism kind of moment, you know, and you want to do this in a way, I think, that looks somewhat almost casual and it doesn't seem overly planned, and it's somewhat informal. The idea here is not what they say or what actually comes out of it, even if it's a brief meeting. It's really the symbolism of these two individuals representing, you know, two sworn enemies coming together and maybe shaking hands, taking a photo, what have you. I think, you know, that's what this is all about, and I expect that will happen tomorrow or the next day or so. And it will be an incredibly important moment, I think, a long overdue moment between these two countries, in which there's been this acrimony for, you know, 35 years almost. And I think this has the potential to really create a diplomatic breakthrough between the U.S. and Iran that could have far-reaching consequences, positive consequences.
And in terms of what's on the agenda, apart from the speeches from all of the heads of state, the UN Secretary General has basically said that Syria is really on the agenda. Let's be clear, the use of chemical weapons in Syria is only the tip of the iceberg. The suffering in Syria must end. Samantha Power has basically said the Security Council the world needs to deal with the Syrian crisis is not the Security Council we have. How do you get around that?
You don't, unfortunately. I mean, I think you deal with the issue that you have right in front of you, which is the chemical weapons issue. And I think there you have potential for the UN and for the Security Council to play a very active and leading role. If you look at the agreement that was signed by the U.S. and Russia, the Security Council basically will be responsible, the Secretary will be responsible for confirming Syrian compliance with the deal, which so far appears to be pretty positive. As the most recent, the first submission by the Syrians about their chemical weapons stockpiles was actually was received rather positively. So that kind of has to be the focus right now. And I think, you know, get this one right. It's a very difficult deal in a very short time frame. But if you can get this right, if you can find a way to use the UN as a tool for confirming compliance and for eliminating these stockpiles in Syria, then maybe that creates a springboard for further diplomacy. I mean, I think that's the way you have to think about it, is a step-by-step process. You're not going to resolve the Syrian civil war anytime soon in the Security Council. And I think, frankly, it's the wrong form to resolve it. But this is a good step forward for diplomacy in the region that involves both the U.S. and Russia.
And again, I'm speaking with Michael Cohen, who's a fellow at the Century Foundation and a columnist for the UK Guardian, where he writes a regular feature on politics and national security. He's the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. And previously he served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the U.S. representative to the United Nations. Now, Samantha Power, of course, comes out of the humanitarian world in the sense that she wrote a Pulitzer Prize-winning book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide. And apparently, from her position at the UN, she has, and prior to that, on the National Security Council in the Obama administration, she has been an advocate for a more assertive U.S. Response to genocide and mass murder that's gone on around the world, and in particular in Syria. And how do you think how much leeway does a UN representative have in terms of their personal feelings and yet the national policy? Because let's face it, the U.S. has stood by while 120,000 plus Syrians have died and basically done nothing.
I don't know if I agree with that. Actually, I think first of all, let's be clear that the options for the U.S. are very limited. Obviously, short of using military force. But, you know, first of all, there's been support, humanitarian support for refugees. There's been efforts in the Security Council to isolate Syria, to put sanctions on Syria. There have been efforts, unilateral efforts by the U.S. to do that. There have been unilateral efforts to support the rebels. I mean, I think the U.S. has done as much as it can do, short of using military force, to try to isolate the Assad regime, to try to find a way for political solution. They have convened diplomatic meetings in Geneva to try to resolve the conflict. So I think they've done more than nothing. And the problem is there's not a lot they can do beyond that because, I think, of the Russian position on Syria, which is that, you know, to be blunt about it, the Russians want Assad to survive. And they're going to use a diplomatic muscle in the UN to try to reach that result. And I think also you have a situation on the ground that's basically a stalemate. So you don't really have an obvious way, I think, to tip the balance one way or the other. So I think, you know, there's not a lot that Samantha Power can do via the UN, not a lot the U.S. can do, unless it wants to get involved militarily, and I think that probably would be a mistake, and I think you have to lose the view of the Obama administration that does not want to get involved in this war.
Well, Michael Cohen, all the Syrian experts that I speak to all seem to agree that that something maybe could have been done very early when the spontaneous rebellion broke out. Before the jihadis came in, the Saudi financed jihadis who've entirely played into Assad's hands, because his basic argument is it's me or the terrorists, and these heart eaters certainly fit the bill and help Assad. But prior to that, when you still had a spontaneous revolution, at the very time when Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said Assad is going to fall soon, which certainly didn't prove to be the case, there's a belief that was when the U.S., and I'm not talking about military intervention, but wholehearted support for the rebellions and did everything in terms of isolating this mafia family that runs Syria.
Well, I think that may be true. I mean, it's sort of a counterfactual, so we can't really know for sure. I mean, I think they were pretty persistent and they were pretty strongly opposed to Assad and pretty strongly supportive of the rebels to a degree. I mean, they weren't providing actual military support or logistical support. I think also it's fair to say that the Syrian rebellion broke out at the exact moment the U.S. was involved in a military conflict in Libya, which may have had something to do with the fact and the president had other issues going on in Washington, which may have had something to do with the fact that there wasn't as much involvement. I think just looking at the situation now, sort of we could say what happened two years ago, but I think now there's very little the U.S. can do, I think, to turn the balance, unless, again, it wants to get involved militarily. And I think, or support the rebels in a much more, you know, robust way. But again, that brings with it all kinds of problems because, you, as you said, you've got rebels who are not necessarily fans of the U.S. and not necessarily the groups you want to see take power in Syria. I think the U.S. position has been to try to find a political settlement. It's probably the right position. I'm not sure it's going to work. But having said that, you know, I think that this deal with the Russians on the chemical weapons is a really important deal and potentially could lead the way toward larger diplomatic breakthroughs. I mean, at this point, you're not going to see much happen until both sides sort of decide that they have more to gain from talking than do from fighting. I don't think you reached that point yet. And you have, as you said, that you have support on both sides. You have support for the rebels from the Saudis and others, and you have support from the Syrians from Iran and from Russia. It's hard to see, again, unless the U.S. takes a more active role, how you tip the balance one way or the other. And again, do you want to tip the balance toward the rebels? I'm not sure the U.S. does either. There's not an obvious black hat and white hat situation here.
Sure. Well, but if the U.S. and Iran start on a different path, that in itself could change. I mean, apparently Iran is the one country that has probably more influence over Syria than any other country.
Oh, absolutely. And I will say this, that the Syrians are probably not thrilled to see this charm offensive from the Iranians because, you know, they're, for obvious reasons, they rely on the Iranians. There's a strong cultural connection between the two countries. You know, but the Iranians were not happy with these chemical weapons. They have their own history with that, and from being attacked by chemical weapons by Saddam Hussein in the 80s during the Iran-Iraq War. So I think that this diplomatic outreach could be problematic for the Syrians. They could see this as somehow the U.S. sort of ironically, I mean, it's sort of surprising to even say this, but the U.S. sort of taking the Iranians, you know, off the field somewhat. I doubt that would happen that far, but you certainly, I think that would cause concern among the Syrians. And again, that. Just the fact that you have diplomatic breakthrough, diplomatic negotiation between the U.S. and Iran may lead the Syrians to conclude that their long-term better deal is talk than to keep fighting. That's one possibility that may come out of this whole situation with Rouhani and with Obama. The Syrians their calculus may change, and that's one positive. That's certainly going to be one positive outgrowth that would occur.
Well, Michael Cohen, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Always a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Cohen, who's a fellow at the Century Foundation and a columnist at the UK Guardian, where he writes a regular feature on politics and national security. He's the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, the greatest presidential campaign speeches of the 20th century and how they shape modern America. And previously he served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the U.S. representatives to the United Nations. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Colin Black. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.